Hi, I'm Kent.
And I'm Anna.
And this is Film and Family, a podcast for filmmakers who want to see real progress in their film careers without sacrificing their health or relationships. Hit subscribe to never miss an episode.
Let's jump right in.
Great. We are going to talk about Momentum. The backstory leading up to this wonderful podcast episode is that I'm at my desk preparing my day. I've got tons of things to do. I am about to enact a marvelous plan for an extremely productive morning, at which point my wife steps into the door and says, "We need to record the podcast right now."
I did not say it like that.
And I'm saying, no, but I've got all this energy. I'm moving forward already on all this stuff I'm doing. My brain is completely focused on all that I've just barely planned. And I was just about to jump into it. So what are we doing the podcast episode on today? And she says, Momentum. So for your enjoyment, edification, and souls, we are doing a podcast on momentum,
and specifically at the expense cognitive of your own momentum. Yes. And I'm sorry.
Well, I shifted my momentum. I tried to channel my chi. You know, Tai
Chi
is all about taking the momentum of your attacker and redirecting it. So I'm redirecting the momentum of the moment. We have maybe 20 minutes.
Yeah, this will be nice and short.
There's a Mr. Rogers episode, keeping our children at bay.
Yeah, you might hear a little bit of the trolley. You might hear our kids come in. We'll see what happens. This will be exciting. But yes, we're going to talk about momentum. And in my own defense, we're doing a table read of the script tonight, which is usually when we record our podcast. So we are going to do this in the morning. You get to join us in our morning day.
We'll probably not be as sleepy.
Yeah. So some of you might be on our list, subscribe to our blog, so you get the blog posts. We recently did one on momentum, but in case you aren't, we're going to go into that today. And if you are, we're just going to go into it in a little more depth. I think this is a really important concept to understand. I learned a little bit more about this from Jody Moore, one of my coaches who I love and admire. And then I've added some of my own thoughts to it as well.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what momentum is, just in general. We understand that momentum comes from Newton's laws of motion regarding the idea that something that's moving wants to stay moving unless it's acted upon by some force. And something that's at rest wants to stay that way. So objects want to keep doing what they are doing or not doing. And that property is also described as inertia. But the dictionary defines momentum as a property of a moving body that determines the length of time required to bring it to rest when under the action of a constant force. So if you're applying a constant force to a moving body that has the mass, the amount of time that it takes for that constant force to bring that body to a stop is how I guess you measure the momentum. So yeah.
Yeah. And just so that you get an idea of why this science lesson is related to film and family, this applies to emotions as well. But the equation for momentum.
I think you wrote this wrong. What?
Did I write it wrong?
It doesn't sound right to me.
This is what Google said. It said momentum is speed times velocity. Or not mass times velocity, I mean.
You wrote right? Speed times velocity.
Velocity is speed, so I wrote that wrong.
Yeah, you wrote it wrong on your email.
Well, good thing we're doing a podcast.
So for you podcast
really confused,
listeners,
then now we'll have some clarity.
Or just not confused, but just feeling superior to the intellect of your emailer. Momentum is mass times velocity.
Sorry, I knew what I was trying to say, and you probably got it. I'm sure you did. So I used a few examples in the email talking about a bullet. Something as small as a bullet, once it gets going fast enough, is very hard to stop, as we know.
Very small mass, extremely high velocity.
Yep. So you can be very high in one or the other. And obviously, if you're multiplying them together, The higher you have both, the higher your momentum is going to be. So karate experts know this. They'll use this to use their bare hands to break through bricks by getting just a fast enough velocity. If you think of an example of mass, I think a train is a perfect example. These trains are huge. They carry a giant mass on each of the cars. So to stop a train takes a long time for it to slow down because it has such momentum from its weight.
Trains aren't super fast, frankly. They can be kind of fast.
But they're slow to stop.
But I mean, like, a motorcycle could go way faster than a train. But a train is so, so massive. I think when I think of massiveness and momentum, a train is probably the greatest example. It's just so easy to understand momentum when you think of a train. It just takes forever to stop it. And that brings me to sleep, which is something that Anne and I, this is a marital thing. Another example is that I've described myself as a train when it comes to sleeping patterns and habits. And Anna is sort of a little Yaris, like a Toyota Yaris.
You said I was a Prius.
Or a Prius. Yeah, a Prius is fine. A compact car that's very small that has great gas mileage. So when I'm awake, I kind of want to stay awake. And mind you, I'm disciplined. I will put myself to bed and I will wake myself up. I've had times and seasons where I'm better at this and times and seasons where I'm a little worse at this. But even right now where I feel like I'm not doing so great, I'm still waking up at 6 a.m. That's a tangent. I just am, you know, not to judge myself. But I try to wake up at 5. But it's very hard for me to go to sleep and it's very hard for me to wake up because once I'm going, I really want to keep going. Whereas Anna, she's like...
You're the train.
She runs at
it.
Yeah, I'm
the
train.
Like, it's slow to start.
Really hard to get it going.
Get your gears
going.
And
really hard to stop the train.
And then really slow to start.
Because I'm massive. I'm 5'6" and massive. And Anna is like this little peppy, compact car that just... You just start it. And you know, the Prius, you can't even tell when it's started. And you just put the gas
on. You just press the button.
You hit the button and then you push the pedal and it's just boom, it's just going. And then when she has to stop, you hit the brake and it's like on a dime. No big deal. It's the teeniest little car. And so when she runs out of energy, she just dies and shuts down. And like at 9 p.m., everything's done and she's completely unconscious and cut off from the world. And so... Anyway,
I can fall asleep very quickly.
Now, what we want to talk about...
And wake up very quickly.
It's true. And then she wakes up and she's, boom, recharged and ready to go. Just like a little... Imagine like a Tesla motorcycle or something. The point here is that the same thing applies to our brains and emotions.
Yep. So emotions have a mass and velocity of sorts as well. If you think about emotions that are fast... I think of fear and anger. Those are the ones that come on quickly. They kind of give us an energy where we want to move quickly.
Adrenaline can be really
fast. Adrenaline,
yeah.
They're a little harder to control because they gain momentum quickly because they travel through your whole body very quickly. And that's, you know, for our survival. That's a reaction if we're in danger and we have fear and we are threatened for our body to quickly respond so that it can be ready in time. So that's good, but that speed also can lead to a quick momentum that is sometimes hard to stop and a little more difficult to yield, to control.
Wield. Yeah.
Yeah.
The emotion itself might be different for each of us, I would think, in terms of what emotions are fast, what are slow, which ones have a lot of mass, and which ones have a lot or less mass, I suppose. I've seen some people where they get angry super fast and then they just get over it fast.
Yeah.
They sort of just calm right down. And there's like certain family dynamics where the relationships are such that kind of energy is like, they're very quick to forgive each other. And they're sort of just like, yeah, you know, that's life. And they just move on. Whereas other families, maybe it doesn't happen very often. And there's a little more of a culture of respect. But boy, if something kind of falls by the wayside, it can affect people. Some people hold on to stuff for weeks. And this, although it might be a little different for each of us because of where our current brains are wired, right? We all have certain neural pathways that we've ingrained deeply and others that aren't. By doing sort of the emotional, I guess the cognitive thought work and trying to get ourselves emotionally healthy and mature allows us to like you said, sort of wield and control the emotional mass and momentum and such, so that maybe something really, really crazy happens or whatever, and you weren't totally emotionally prepared for it, but you're able to be patient with yourself and kind of take it in stride, accept it more quickly and move forward, as opposed to beat yourself up about it all day and sort of burn out and then say, stay stuck for the whole day or the whole week. I think examples would be helpful, but I think we can all think of times in our lives where we've either had a really big high or a really big low that kind of went on for a while.
Yeah. So that's sort of like, we've talked about velocity. I also want to talk about weight a little bit, or mass. You corrected me that those are two different things, but they're kind of the same. Like, they're really related.
Sure.
So I do feel like certain emotions have a weight. They feel very heavy, and those emotions can also gain momentum and get you down and be kind of hard to lift, like that emotional weight. So you can also notice which emotions have that sort of weight for you and what kind of momentum is that creating. But I also just had this thought while you're talking, Kent, that maybe there is a degree of personality that comes with this. Like, you're a train, right? And I'm a Prius. And just knowing that about ourselves might apply to our emotions as well. I actually do think I'm more quick to anger or to maybe feel an emotion, but then also quicker to turn it off and just be like, okay, that's done. And I think you're like slower to anger, but maybe it takes you a little longer to get out of that as well. So maybe that's just something that we also look for, is what sort of momentum do you kind of have in your emotional personality?
Well, and I just want to push back just enough to say personality is something that can be productive or not productive to understand. I don't like it when we talk about personality as if it's this unchangeable, ingrained, born with thing that you can't really control. But I mean, personality is whatever your current wiring is. I believe it's changeable. Honestly, I do.
Yeah.
It's a ton of work, but it's possible. And I think it's important to just accept our personalities, whatever that is, wherever it is at this point in your life. And so in that way, like, as you're defining personality, sure, that can be helpful. But at the same time, I don't want to just think that thought, I am a train, or I am this personality, this is unchangeable kind of a thing. Now, certain physical attributes of my body, that's a circumstance that I might not be able to change. I can improve my health and whatnot, but certain circadian rhythms and sleep habits and such, to some degree, I suppose, are, you know, I'm 5'6" and a half. I can't change that. You know what I mean? Like, my eyes are brown. I can't change that. But in terms of cognitive stuff, I think that's very, very malleable, unless there's sort of literally something sort of happening there that would be more of like a disease or something that you could really, really, really diagnose.
But even if it is changeable, I think knowing where you're at right now is helpful. And then you might decide it's not worth it. You might decide it's worth it to make the change, to do the work to change, or you might just decide I'm going to work with what I have and just kind of be aware of what my tendencies are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sometimes is the better or easier route to go.
Yeah. And I do think that it's always helpful. Being able to see a clear picture of who you are and where you're at is necessary. I think about sort of knowing that maybe it takes a while to slow something down. Sometimes I think we don't want to stop or slow down or do what it takes to restart, because especially if we feel like we are a train and we're getting this massive amount of momentum, stopping sounds really inconvenient. It's like, yeah, but I'm going so fast, I'm making such progress. But if you're emotionally falling apart, the best thing in that moment to do is stop the train.
Well, and this is if there's a negative momentum. Like,
exactly.
It's not going the direction you want.
Exactly. I think one of my favorite phrases or quotes or whatever is, doing something wrong extremely well makes you more wrong.
Yeah.
It's like this, I guess I should call it a concept, because really I'm not really quoting anything. But I see some people that are like, they're so fixed in how well they're doing a thing, but it's the wrong thing. And I guess I won't give too many examples. I guess the word wrong is something you can decide for yourself given the circumstance. But if you're doing something that isn't leading you to the result you want, but you're so fixed on the thing that you're doing that you just have to be doing it, once again, you're getting stuck in the means and forgetting the ends, like we've talked about before in a previous episode about means and ends. And so stop the train. Right? If you're not going where you want to be going, and if you're emotionally not where you want to be. We're doing what we do. We almost always do what we do to accomplish a feeling. We're trying to reach goals for a feeling. We're trying to get things or do things or become things because of the feeling we believe it will produce. And if the process is making us super angry, we need to stop and do the thought work to address that anger and then start back up again so that we're in the right place while we're moving the train. And so if you have a Prius, it might be really easy to just, you know, I guess I should say when we become emotionally healthy, maybe it becomes a little more of a Prius where you can stop the vehicle, address it, and then make the turn and, or I guess even slow down.
Sometimes if you have to
turn a vehicle, you have to slow down.
Yeah.
Same with a train. If you're rounding a turn, mm-hmm. you slow down. You don't blast that turn at full speed. Yeah.
If you don't. I think there's pros and cons to both, you know, because a little Prius will never have as much momentum. It can start and stop quickly, and that's nice, but it doesn't have the momentum of a train and the power of a train. And so it's a little light thing. You know, there's pros and cons to both. And sometimes you can get momentum in a positive direction, and that can be really powerful. And just, you know, people who've changed the world because they just had enough momentum around a cause that they just moved forward and nothing could stop them.
Yeah.
Or on the other hand, your momentum can be carrying you the wrong direction and feel out of control, where you feel like I can't control my emotions, or you're afraid of your emotions because they build and they build and you're like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, I can't stop this. So if you're feeling that way, it's good to know that the thing that's creating the momentum is that mass and velocity of emotion. So you can, first of all, slow down the velocity, just slow down. Focus on one thing right in front of you and just do it slowly. Even if that's, I just need to sit down for a minute.
So I really want to apply this. We're talking about this in terms of cognitive and emotional spheres. But I want to think about this in terms of career. So we're filmmakers and we understand that we're in the entertainment industry. Think about something like a movement, like Anna just said. Think about the civil rights movement, for example. Think about the momentum that it took for a single personality like Martin Luther King and all the people around him, and also just the thousands of people and millions of people across the United States that it took to get the momentum of that movement going. And it's interesting that it's called a movement, I think, and the change that's required for that long-term big change. Now, think about it in terms of your own careers. Think about celebrities. I feel like we look at these celebrities that are in pop music or acting or whatever it is, and when your career starts to gain a lot of momentum, it can start to feel one of two ways, like you're on a train that you can't steer or control or decide where it's going, or you are moving it where you want it to go. Now, let's take it back from celebrities and just say, I have friends, for example, that are so skilled at post-production that they feel like they can't do anything else. They want to write screenplays. They want to direct, but they feel like they've been pigeonholed into post-production. They feel like their career has this momentum that they can't seem to divert or deflect or redirect in any way. And I think about the people whose careers seem to skyrocket. It always starts really small and really slow, and the momentum builds both in terms of the mass of the vehicle and the velocity of that vehicle. Both grow a little at a time, and maybe there's a time where you're growing the mass and there's a time where you're growing the velocity. And you could apply that analogy in various ways. One could be hungry for profit versus hungry for growth in terms of business, which is a concept we've talked about before. It's a Clay Christensen concept, at least that's how where we learned it. So my point is I've noticed that there were some trains I had to just jump off of. I did wedding videos for a long time, and that was a fine thing. And if you do wedding videos, that does not mean you're not a filmmaker and it's not below you. I just say that because I learned a ton. I got hundreds and hundreds of hours of experience using
documentary film, basically.
All sorts of camera, rig, editing, coloring, sound mixing. I got to know the basics of all of those things on wedding videos. And it just gave me a lot of confidence. And
I think you were very good at saying, let's establish these characters. Let's get to know these people in this moment. And and approaching it as a documentary event and creating a story.
I was really, really fixated on making it as narrative as possible. Eventually, that just wasn't cutting it for me. I wasn't very happy chasing clients on a one-off basis, and I didn't love the events themselves. I felt some pride and joy when I finished stuff, and I do feel like I was providing a lot of value for couples, but it was never my goal. It was never anything I wanted to do long term, and it wasn't producing the joy that I was seeking, and I just kind of took stock for myself. And by the way, your career doesn't produce joy for you. It doesn't produce emotions for you because that's a circumstance, but it was just a decision I didn't really feel was serving me.
Well,
anymore.
I love that idea of jumping off the train. And
I jumped off that train. I set a date where I said, I'm not going to do weddings ever again after this date. And I set that date and I jumped off that train and I decided I was going to try and build momentum in other areas of my life where I could build maybe better momentum.
Well, it's true. Like if you imagine a train and you don't have a track laid down, for example, you haven't prepared for that momentum ahead of time, then that train is just going to crash and burn. So like when you're scaling your life or scaling your business, you have to be very careful that you're prepared for the growth that's about to come, because when you grow everything, you know? So you grow the problems, you grow the money. If you have a lot of stress already, you're going to grow the stress. So you need to make sure that you can handle what's on your plate and that's pretty, pretty good before you grow all of it.
But the wedding videos are going so well and you're making so much money and you're doing all this stuff. The momentum of it is going. And so once again, no matter how well you're doing something, if it's the wrong thing, what difference does it make? The more you do,
it's not taking you the direction you want to be going.
Yeah, the more and the better you do the wrong
thing,
the
momentum just gets
you
farther away from your goal. Or practicing piano is something I think of. If you are practicing it wrong, you're practicing trying to play a piece and you're not playing it correctly, you're going to actually get it more and more stuck in your head with the wrong technique. So bad practice just gets you really good at playing it badly.
Yeah. So going back to the cognitive stuff, that applies every day. Career, that's big decision stuff. And if you're on a path that you feel like is good, just keep going and you'll slowly build the mass and the velocity of what you're doing. And I would recommend Noam Kroll. Once again, we've mentioned this a lot, compounding effort, which is this idea that if you invest a little bit of time every day towards something, over time, that all adds up into this massive amount of compounding effort. A small amount of money a day invested in an interest-bearing account creates compounding interest until that starts to sort of explode. The same thing is absolutely true for our careers, but bringing it back to cognitive things.
To a really small scale.
The thoughts you think and the beliefs you grow and think over and over and over again, it's like this investment, and it will grow in velocity and mass the longer and the more often you think it. So if you think it once a day, or you think it 10 times a day, if you just keep reminding yourself of certain beliefs that are taking you in the direction you want to go, are generating the emotions and feelings you want to have surrounding certain things, then you will start to see progress in those directions in your life.
Yeah, that's just how our brains work. What we focus on, we create more of in our life, and we create more evidence for in our life, because your brain wants to be right and wants to hold on to the beliefs that give it some structure and some rules to operate within. And so if you are thinking, oh, the world is so cruel, everyone's out to get me, and that's a thought that you go back to, it's just a random example, over and over again, then your brain is just on the daily in the background looking for evidence. It says, oh, you're focused on this, you must be interested in this topic. Let me show you evidence of how the world is cruel and evidence of how everyone's out to get you.
And here's why your brain does that. Because your brain is wired for momentum.
And efficiency.
Well, momentum is inherently going to give us a degree of efficiency.
Yeah.
Once a train has a ton of momentum, it doesn't take much fuel to maintain that extremely high momentum, velocity, and the mass of the object moving at a certain velocity. Your brain wants to be right. In other words, even if it believes something wrong, it wants you to believe that it's right because it wants to protect that rightness. Everyone's brain does this. And so if it finds something that disagrees with it, even if it's right and good and going to actually take you where you want to go, your brain will put up some resistance. It will be hard to redirect the momentum of the thought, even though that thought isn't serving you.
It will see it as irrelevant to your current neural pathways, which is more work for the brain to rebuild neural pathways.
Because the train is moving so well in the wrong direction. And so it says, well, this is inconvenient for the direction we're going now. But if it's not the direction you want to be going, you've got to rechannel those thoughts. And so if you're thinking, everyone hates me, or these are all very self-victimizing thoughts we're thinking of. Can we think of like a very specific thing? Like, my kids are manipulating me to get what they want. That's something I think we think often, or we found ourselves thinking. That thought, you could find tons of evidence for that. It's not even hard. Is it really true? Well, I guess it depends on what the word manipulating means, but there's a lot of thought work you could do around that to get to a point where maybe you're thinking, my children are going through a natural point in their development where they are testing boundaries. And the more I help them realize where those boundaries are, the safer they're going to feel, even though they're going to resist those boundaries. And I can teach them those boundaries without getting angry. It's normal for them to look for those boundaries, and I'm helping them by showing them where those boundaries are. Changing, like shifting and practicing that paradigm. Even just now saying it for me is probably a good thing. saying that and practicing that paradigm eventually is going to generate a way more productive long-term trajectory, because if it's my children are trying to manipulate me, I'm going to have a ton of resentment and anger toward my children, and that relationship is going to be really sour. And that's going to lead to, I mean, you can imagine all the negative results that that's going to bring in our lives. Whereas just saying, this is natural, this is a phase that all children that are developing and healthy go through, where they're testing boundaries, and I'm going to be helpful and accepting as they test those boundaries. And if I get a little impatient, I can be accepting of myself and be like, all parents that are developing go through a little bit of a, you know, hey, this is normal. Then we can all be accepting and forgiving of ourselves and our children. And hopefully that generates a family culture that starts to become more pleasant, even though our brain might sometimes really want to assert itself and say, no, can't you see how they're manipulating? That's normal. A healthy brain does that.
And that's your default. You know, that's the default wiring that you have in your brain. So when you're trying to redirect.
We'll speak personally. You might be in a healthier place.
In this example, that's the default. And so when you do want to go a new direction and you want to practice that new belief, that actually does take work to build that momentum in that direction. And I think it's really helpful to have a practice of writing down those beliefs, like the one you just said, so you can revisit them, read through them in your brain and reinforce them. Going kind of back to the emotional side, we've sort of talked about how to get rid of momentum when it's going the wrong way is by slowing down. Another way is by lightening up. Humor is so useful to us under stress because it helps us lighten up those heavy emotions. Having a sense of humor about what's going on or struggles that we're facing, I just think that's a really good way to lighten it up.
I think lighthearted is a virtue. I think lightheartedness, in my mind, I don't know if that phrase is familiar to you or not, but lightheartedness is, to me, definable as being very accepting. And also, I think being very accepting can lead to a really sweet sense of humor, where you can find people's biggest flaws sort of endearing and funny. And not funny
even
in like a rude way, but funny in like a, I love that flaw about that person or about myself or whatever. And it's not that you love it, that you want it to just keep going and be flawed more. But I think sometimes we think that doing that will make us flawed or we'll never change or progress. The opposite is usually true. Once you accept something, it can move on and you can kind of see that thing fade away, both in yourself and others. When you won't accept certain flaws in others, it actually kind of makes it sometimes harder for people to grow in our lives. Whereas if we can really accept them, it helps them maybe feel like they can accept themselves, and that leads to growth. So that lightheartedness can be so, so valuable as a virtue. That's the really maybe definable as our ability to accept is our ability to redirect momentum and be able to move something that might be massive and moving at a high velocity in a remarkably fast and efficient manner if we are extremely accepting of ourselves.
Yeah. I always think that's powerful. Like in a coaching session, say, on Parenthood, where someone's talking about how hard it is. It feels very serious and very big when I can help them get to a place of laughter. Like, oh, wait, you didn't get the manual? You know, they give you a manual at the hospital. Like, you didn't get it? Like, this is supposed to be easy. You know, you can kind of just laugh at yourself and laugh at what you're going through and lighten things up. On the other hand, you can use this in a powerful way towards a direction you want to go to build momentum towards it. And we all know this feeling where there's a thing on your to-do list that you don't really want to do. You're like, I don't really want to clean out the closet. You avoid it. But then as soon as you just decide to do it and you start doing it, you start building momentum in that direction. And then suddenly I'm like, wait, I'm cleaning the closet. Don't stop me. I'm almost done. I want to finish.
I want to keep doing that thing that I didn't want to do that I was resisting.
Yeah. Exactly. So you can build this in a positive way, which is interesting to think about. How do I build positive momentum through velocity? I think that that's probably a lot of what Tony Robbins does, which I'm not like a huge fan of this method, but he talks about how motion and emotion are connected. And so I know at his events, he gets people moving. He gets them like jumping up and down and dancing. And I think that builds a positive sort of velocity of moving these emotions. And I don't necessarily do that, but even just like running, exercising, building excitement, building a group feeling, I think can build mass. Like we talked about a movement. As that movement builds velocity and mass, I think it's more people joining in and adding to the energy. So I think we can build mass by like finding people with similar beliefs who can reinforce that, and we can all together sort of embrace a mindset or an energy and build that momentum in a positive way.
Yeah. I don't know if I have any concluding thoughts, but I feel like this might feel conceptual, but hopefully we've covered some really great ground in terms of not just the concepts, but how they apply and how it can be applied to help us understand our brains, our relationships, and our careers in a little bit of a clearer way. And in terms of putting this powerfully into practice, I can't really think of a better way to do that than by trying coaching. So if you have more questions on coaching, continue to listen to the podcast, look at some of our past episodes, or get a free consultation with no obligation. Those consultations are actually really valuable, in my opinion, even if you don't book. But it is a great way to invest in yourself and investing in both the personal, emotional, familial, and career-based momentum in your life. And so, anyway.
Yeah, I think it's easy to say, like, how can I afford to invest in one more thing? There's always so many things to invest in film, but I really don't know how you can afford not to invest in your own health and your own well-being while you're on this journey. And that's kind of what we've tried to create in the Film and Family program, is just those tools for your own mental and emotional health, as well as career advancement and the guidance. Like, that's what the coaching is being able to see what's going on in your own brain.
Yep. And our personal and our relationship healths, when they run out and die, then the momentum of everything dies in our lives. So your career is included in that. So you cannot maintain a high level of momentum in your career if your physical health fails you, or if your relationships fall to pieces. Those things will demand attention. When things on the train start to break, or if the train track itself starts to fall to pieces, not only will the train lose its momentum very, very fast, but pretty disastrous stuff can happen. And we see that every day on Google and
in
our news feeds regarding the industry, about all these people who finally the peace breaks that they were just neglecting or totally compromising. And that's when the affairs and the sex scandals and the
drug overdoses
and the emotional fallouts and the people that just totally like abandon their career because they can't maintain it anymore. And there's really no need to let everything get to that point. We can invest right now in our health, in our families, in our relationships, and in our careers in a way that lets it keep growing until you can be Christopher Plummer, who just passed this week after over 90 years of a remarkable career. And he won his first Oscar in his 80s because he had this momentum. I mean, he smashed it in Sound of Music decades before he ever started winning Oscars, and then he won 2 Oscars in his 80s, and he was doing like his best movies at like 89 and 90. I feel like Knives Out was like one of his best movies.
Yeah,
and it was like a year or two before he passed away. because I guess he was healthy enough to keep acting and he kept his life together enough, I guess. I don't know much about his personal life and who knows how well his marriages were or whatever. Yeah, but
she has been married to one person her whole life and she's been pretty steady and healthy, I think, in a lot of ways.
And look at her career. Has her career slowed down? Like everyone says, women can't act past the age of 40 because no one wants to cast them because they're not attractive enough and young enough. But Meryl Streep, I can think of other examples. Melissa Leo, totally go against that, right? They're winning Oscars in their sort of later years.
Their success is just compounding as well.
Yeah, these are actors specifically, but it can apply to anyone's career, anyone's personal lives. You know, save the best for last. And if you can keep your life balanced and keep moving forward, and when you fall down, keep getting up, then you can be unstoppable. So, yeah, thanks for joining us on this episode.
Yeah, if you like what you're hearing and you think of someone who comes to mind who could benefit from this, one of the best compliments you can give us is a referral to pass this along to your filmmaker friends. And a 5-star review is also great. It helps other people find this podcast easier. And we'll leave you with that. We'll visit you again next week and tell you about our film that we're going to be in the middle of.
All right. Peace.